with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. The Lord said, "Woe to you, Pharisees! You pay tithes of mint and of rue and of every garden herb, but you pay no attention to judgment and to love of God. These you should have done without looking over the others. Woe to you, Pharisees! You love the seat of honor in synagogues and greetings in marketplaces. Woe to you! You're like unseen graves over which people unknowingly walk." Then one of the scholars of the law said to test him, "Teacher, by saying this, you're insulting us too." And he said, "Woe to you also, scholars of the law! You impose on people burdens hard to carry, but you yourselves do not lift one finger to touch them." The Gospel of the Lord. Today we finish 9 days of study of St. Paul's letter to the Galatians. Tomorrow we'll begin 2 weeks on his letter to the Ephesians. He summarizes everything he's been saying to us over this last week and a half by the effects of the two lives he's been sketching. Life according to the works of the law and life according to faith. Life according to the works of the law produce, he says, the works of the flesh. Now feel the earthquake on that one. Normally when we talk about the works of the flesh, we would think about the works that would flow from the threefold concupiscence. Pride of life, trying to dominate others. Lust of the flesh, or carnal concupiscence specifically, a cupidity that really is acquisitive. And lust of the eyes, a materialism, a wanting to possess. We would have no problem in recognizing that the works of the flesh flow from these three forms. But St. Paul was shockingly saying that the works of the flesh likewise flow from life in which you make the works of the law a small g god. That what happens in a circumstance like that is it cannot but lead to this pride of life. That you try to control even God. That you try to make your desires His, not the other way around. That you seek to build up your own kingdom rather than His. And he then lists what the works that come from living under the law rather than being guided by the Spirit are. And we see all of these, shockingly, in what happened on Good Friday. Immorality, impurity, licentiousness, idolatry, sorcery, hatreds, rivalry, jealousy, outbursts of fury, acts of selfishness, dissensions, factions, envy, and the like. These people whom Jesus in the Gospel would call like unseen graves over which people unknowingly walk. People who clean the outside but not on the inside. Those who would seem to be walking in God's ways actually within were cesspools producing precisely these works. Nothing was more immoral than their conspiracy to have an innocent man killed. Nothing more impure than their desire for control. It was a real idolatry of their own power. Hatred was eating them up for Jesus. Rivalries. You would see that when the Sanhedrin began to fight. Jealousy, fury, selfishness, envy, factions. These people who were living by the law in its minutiae, so they thought, we're actually capable of all of this. there's another way. St. Paul describes it and summarizes the entire letter to the Galatians by being guided by the Spirit. This is what it means to live by faith, that there's a new law inside and that we inhere in it. Not just adhere to it as something extrinsic, but inhere as something that perfects our nature from within. And we see what this leads to. This beautiful list. Love. If we're really living by the Holy Spirit, how can't we burn with love for God and others? Peace. If we have peace with God, we're not tempted to be bellicose with anyone. Patience. If we know as God, if God is with us, He's going to bring good. He's going to bring gold out of even the things that we find difficult. Why wouldn't we wait it out with Him? Kindness. He changes us from within so that we look on others and sacrifice for them like a good Samaritan. Generosity. We recognize how rich we are and how capable we are of sharing that with others. Faithfulness. He strengthens us to be true today and until the end. Gentleness. He makes us meek and humble. We don't try to bulldoze anyone, but in fact, treat them as Jesus, for example, treated those who were caught in sin. And then self-mastery is the exclamation point of this all. Self-control, that there's a self-possession made so by the strength of God so that we can more easily give of ourselves to God and others. Against these, there is no such law. When we're living according to the Spirit, we don't need the external situation of the law anymore, because the Holy Spirit is guiding us from within, not contrary to the law, but in virtue, so that we're doing the law without even thinking about doing the law. This contrast between these two ways is highlighted by Jesus. It's likewise highlighted by the Psalms. In the Gospel, Jesus, as he speaks about the Pharisees, is outing what's within. That even though it seems like they're being guided by God, they're not. And this is always a warning for those whom others think are religious, who others think are holy, who are dressed in black or blue and white. What's really happening on the inside? Is it really this inherence in God the Holy Spirit? Or is it, in a sense, a con game? If it is true, then those around whom we live will be able to say things and spot these fruits of the Spirit. Those with whom we live, with those with whom we interact, even on our bad days, accuse us of love, of joy, of peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. The Holy Spirit wants to produce this fruit in us. We know the difference between works and fruit. St. John Paul II used to stress this, that works were all our own responsibility. But fruit is two sources. As we know from botany, there's the insemination by God, and then there's the receptivity of the soil. There are two elements, our cooperation with God. And there is a fruit that has all of these characteristics rather than a whole series of independent things, because each of these aspects is part of the gift of the Holy Spirit when we truly receive Him. Responsorial Psalm describes two ways. Those who live according to the flesh are like chaff that the wind drives away, and that way eventually vanishes. But those who live by the Spirit, who don't follow the counsel of the wicked, who don't walk in the way of sinners, who don't give in to these various works of the flesh, are like trees planted near running water, yielding fruit in all seasons. Somebody who highlights the conversion from the way according to the flesh to the way guided by the Spirit is the saint the church celebrates today, Pope St. Callistus. He was a slave in the end of the second century. He was a smart slave who was entrusted with managing all his master's accounts. But whether he was sloppy in his job or whether he just stole from his master, the master lost most of his money and Callistus was in trouble. So Callistus just escaped. He ran away. He eventually got to Sardinia, that island to the west of Rome, where he was hiding. Eventually he was caught and imprisoned. Because of a general amnesty, he was let out. He came back to Rome, repentant. Pope St. Zephyrinus discovered his talent, gave him another shot, put him in charge of a job nobody was really interested in the second century, which was to care for the dead in the cemeteries. But he did it, and he did it very, very well. He organized the whole cemetery system at a time in which there was ferocious anti-Christian persecution. Christians who would go visit their graves, the graves of their loved ones, to pray there, were putting themselves at risk. So the whole catacombal system was first, because of cheaper expenses for the poorer classes, underneath the ground rather than the rich mausoleum above the ground. It was also a means by which they would be able to venerate the dead without putting their necks out. And Callistus organized it all. So when there was an opening among the seven deacons in Rome, the Pope said, "I want to make you deacon." And so Callistus was made a deacon. There were hundreds of priests in Rome, but only seven deacons. And the deacons were the ones with extraordinary administrative skill to be able to manage stuff. And when Pope St. Zephyrinus died, the presbyteroi of Rome, all the pastors of the parishes, the cardinal priests of the city, the hinge priests, they got together and they elected Callistus, the successor of Zephyrinus, and he was ordained a priest and then ordained a bishop. And he knew where he had come from, and he knew how difficult that challenge was. And so he had a great kindness and mercy for those who needed to make that same shift. He was so merciful that he scandalized some of the more rigorous, we could call them Pharisaical colleagues, like the priest Hippolytus, who thought that he should have been pope, and he was the first anti-pope at that time, because he thought he was infinitely more qualified than Callistus, because he was living according to the flesh rather than to the spirit. Callistus, for those who had committed the great crimes for which, at the time, it was extremely difficult to receive forgiveness in the sacrament of confession, abortion, murder, apostasy, idolatry, he created paths for them to be able to come back and receive mercy. For those who had lapsed under the persecutions, he likewise gave them another chance as God had given him a chance. And he precisely became known for this type of mercy because he recognized that the Holy Spirit had been sent among us in those most beautiful words that exist on earth, for the forgiveness of sins. At the beginning of Mass today, we prayed that through the intercession of St. Callistus, we might be led from slavery to sin to true freedom of the Spirit. That's what these last 9 days have been about. That's what Jesus has come into the world to call us to. So that when people look within the tomb, they find Jesus raised in us by the power of the Spirit.